I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
It is currently 7:15 on this Tuesday morning, October 28th. Rain tonight, gonna turn cool tomorrow. By the time you wake up, it's gonna feel completely different, which is good. Knox Ross joins us now, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission, and apparently the ridership is completely different in a good way than they thought it would be for the Mardi Gras service. How you doing, Knox?
I'm doing great, Tommy. It seems like every time you and I try to get together, something big happens in Louisiana.
Yeah, I'm telling you, that's the case, isn't it? Let's talk about it used to be the Gulf Coast Limited, right? Now it's called Mardi Gras Service.
That's right.
Let's talk train language for a second. What does that mean, Gulf Coast Limited, back in the day?
Well, it was just the name of the service. We had one back during the old World's Fair in 82. Mm-hmm. And then in the mid-90s, it came back, and that was one train a day. It came from Mobile to New Orleans in the morning and from New Orleans to Mobile in the evening. And so this is a totally different service than those other two services were. And the other two services were fairly successful. It's just that, you know, the funding ran out on those, or the World's Fair ran out, mm-hmm. you know, obviously. And this time, the model seems to work, having trains each way where you can go and come in a day, and it makes a lot of sense.
So tell me about what was anticipated and what kind of ridership you're seeing.
Well, the initial numbers when Amtrak first looked at this, I mean, they were saying like 40,000 people would ride it in a year, which we thought was way off. The official final numbers that they based everything on was about 71,000 people a year. We've already crossed 30,000 in 3 months or so. Mm. Last week with Cruising the Coast on the Mississippi coast, that was the highest ridership week we've had to date.
Why do you think people are embracing it so much?
It just makes sense. There's a group in Mobile that put together a Facebook site, Friends of the Amtrak Mardi Gras, and you go on there, and there are people talking about their ride experience, what they're doing on the train, why they're using the train. And it's not only getting tourists back and forth between places. People are using this for business. I've got a friend in Ocean Springs who's a travel agent who is putting together tours of New Orleans for the day, and she's doing the same thing in Mobile. There's just all sorts of different reasons why, but it's because people just don't want to drive I-10, mm-hmm. but they want to go to the cities along the coast because they're also attractive.
So what is a typical trip look like if I'm going to get on the Mardi Gras? Are we calling it the Mardi Gras Express? What are we calling it?
It's the Amtrak Mardi Gras service. I think people are calling it the Mardi Gras Express because that just makes sense. But
seems like a
good name. Is the Amtrak Mardi Gras service.
So tell me what's going to happen once I get on the train.
Well, it's
from here, Amtrak, and then we'll come back.
Yeah. All right. So if you get on the train, you go down to Union Passenger Terminal, and the city of New Orleans owns that, and they it's a very safe facility. The Sheriff's Department runs the security there. I've been there many times. Very comfortable. They board the train just like you see in the movies. They announce the train. You walk out to the cars. There's nobody prodding you or scanning you or anything else. It's just a very easy, civilized way to get on the train. You settle in either to your coach seat, and you also have some business class seats, which have been very popular, mm-hmm. Which is more like a real first class, probably better than a first class airline seat because mm-hmm. the seats on the coaches are as big as a first class airline seat. Mm. And then you settle in and you take a very smooth ride over to the Mississippi coast or to Mobile. I mean, and you have a full cafe car with drinks, snacks, food. You got some local fare that you can get. You can get you a nice community coffee in the morning instead of a Starbucks, which is much better.
Mm-hmm.
You got several local vendors that have beers and liquors and different things. And you're deposited right in the middle of the downtowns. You had 51 people that rode Saturday to Bay St. Louis to take in the Witch's Walk. And you get off the train, and you can literally walk to, you know, down to Front Street Bay St. Louis,
mm-hmm,
on Beach Boulevard. And most of the cities now, I know Pascagoula's now doing this. Bay St. Louis has it. Mobile has it. Have rental golf carts and golf cart taxi services. It'll take you anywhere you want to go. I mean, there's really nothing like this in the country that just caters to people, and you're in some really neat cities and places that deserve a visit.
What time do they leave? The trains leave, or does the train leave in the morning from New Orleans?
You know, it's early. It's I think it's 7 something in the morning out of Mobile, around 8 in New Orleans. Late afternoon, early evening. So you have a full day in any destination. You can go out if you want to go to Biloxi, take in whatever, go to the casino, go to some of the museums, you get a full day, you go to Gulfport, you can go to the aquarium, have a really nice day, beach, you can go over to Mobile, which is very interesting. We laugh about this, Tommy, but we had people that claim to be experts, says nobody really wants to go to Mobile. Well, we're finding out a lot of people want to go to Mobile.
Why wouldn't anybody want to go to Mobile?
Well, they just said, I don't think anybody wants to go to Mobile. Well, mm-hmm, Mobile is pretty neat. It's got a beautiful downtown. It's sort of a mini French Quarter,
uh-huh,
in many respects. It's got wonderful restaurants, great shops. It's got some really neat museums right there, all walkable, because you stop right at the foot of downtown. Beautiful hotels. I highly recommend it. People are very nice. It's a wonderful trip.
Hey, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Talking to Knox Ross, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. I want to talk about what this says about people wanting to and willing to ride trains, because I think it'd be a heck of an experience just to do it. But like you're saying, not just for recreation, but for business. And that brings us to maybe Baton Rouge to New Orleans and those kind of things. 722 traffic now, WWL. It is 7:27 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Knox Ross, chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. Like he says, every time we talk, something big seems to happen in Louisiana. Lord only knows what it's going to be next time. Let's talk about what this says about the public's appetite for rail travel, Knox.
It's incredible to us. I mean, we're well over double what was projected. The customer service responses are some of the best Amtrak has in its system. The onboard service crews have taken ownership of the train. The people just love it. They're seeing it now as a piece of the transportation infrastructure of the Gulf Coast. I think this bodes well for looking at other.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Services, say Baton Rouge, New Orleans, the I-20 corridor. This is a proof of concept that people will use it, that it works, and it brings economic development to the cities that it serves.
Somebody wants to know about reservations to take the train. Do you need them, or can you just go up and buy a ticket?
No. You can just go on the Amtrak app or Amtrak.com, or you can call 1-800-USA-RAIL, and they will take care of you. They have group discounts that you can call 1-800-USA-RAIL and get group discounts, which a lot of people are taking advantage of. So it's very easy to get a ticket. I would encourage you to get it early, because, mm-hmm, people talk about you got a $15 base fare. Well, that's that's if you book early. They go up pretty quickly as the train fills up.
Any final thoughts, Knox?
We're just delighted. I think from a New Orleans perspective, we're now bringing over 400 people a day in and out of a part of the CBD that really needs 400 people a day in and out of there. And I think if you look forward to what a Baton Rouge, New Orleans would do, it would be tremendous. And this is a great win for New Orleans with a new mayor coming in with a lot of energy. We just want to be a part of that and be a part of the resurgence of New Orleans.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time and your efforts. Knox Ross, Chairman of the Southern Rail Commission. Before we talk next time, I will take that train, I promise you. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk to Senator Bill Cassidy about the government shutdown, about funding SNAP, and more. After that, we'll talk to Glenn Gilbo, editor of Tiger Rag, about LSU and Brian Kelly. Then we're going to talk to the birthday boy, Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, about the Saints and the Bucks and Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler and more. Right now, though, we pause for WWL First News, and for that, we go to Dave Cohen. All right, 7:46, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Senator Dr. Mr. Bill Cassidy. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about SNAP, because I see where 39, almost 40% of SNAP recipients are children. I think 20% are elderly, and then a different percentage are disabled. Tell me what you got going on in the federal government to help fund the SNAP program during the government shutdown.
So Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, will put up a bill today requesting that they continue to be funded. I'm supporting that, by the way. I'll vote for it. So there's already people who are casualties, if you will, of the shutdown, but the children and who depend upon the SNAP program should not be among them. So I'll be supporting that today.
So let's talk about the government shutdown itself. You're a doctor. If I were to say, okay, go into Dr. Cassidy's office and say, you can say, what's the problem? And say, doctor, the government shut down. And you're going to go about explaining this to me, tell me, and solving it how? Diagnosing it and solving it how?
The way I diagnose it is, well, first, Democrats want an extension of premium tax credits. All that does is paper over the high cost of health care for people in the Obamacare exchanges. It doesn't do anything for the people in the employer-sponsored market. Tommy, your insurance is going up. My insurance is going up 20%. So this coming year, year over year. And it's been, it'll continue to do that for a while. So what I would say is, let's sit down, come up with some proposals that would actually lower the cost of health care, not just for the people in Obamacare exchanges, but for the people who are on Medicare Part D, the people who are getting their insurance through their employer or paying for it for their employees. If we do that, we can achieve the goal of lowering the health care costs, and I think Republicans and Democrats could live with that.
But how do you go about that? Because as I understand it, the people that are on the Obamacare subsidies because of the Affordable Care Act, I don't want to hurt myself here using the wrong terms because it's a kind of complicated thing, but to me, that's proven that they'll buy insurance if it's affordable. If it becomes unaffordable for them and these credits expire, what happens then to them?
So obviously, you got to lower the cost of health care to lower the cost of premiums. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to do that, ways that would that we know would absolutely lower premiums significantly. And by the way, it's not the poorer people that are affected, because they'll continue to get almost completely subsidized. Mm-hmm. It's the people who are kind of, if you will, making $100,000 a year right now. Now, some folks thought that the Democrats went too far by giving subsidies for people making, I don't know, $250,000 or $300,000 a year. So you can have a discussion about that. But we got to lower the cost of health care. There's things we can do to do that, and everybody benefits if we actually lower the cost of health care.
So how are you going to go about doing that, Senator? Because we hear a lot about that, but when will it actually happen? Because, again, like you said, I don't know about you in Congress, but my premiums certainly are going up every year, and I don't see anything changing.
Well, my premiums are going up as well. And so how do you go about doing it? You need to actually have Democrats come to the table, open the government so that we can begin to work on it. I say that because I have some legislation that would lower the cost of health care. And the problem is that we can't get the support we need from the people that work for the government to actually put it in the legislative language.
What is that specific legislation? I'm trying to understand the way the healthcare delivery system, and I'm trying to understand what it is that you're proposing that's going to actually bring down the cost of health care for me and people like you and everybody else.
I see. So, without getting too technical, among the proposals...
Well, you can get technical, because like I say, if you play golf for money, you know where in the weeds, that's where most of the cheating goes on. That's where all the money changes hands, so...
So very simple things. There is, if you put in price transparency, so that someone knows that if they go here, it costs them $5,000, but if they go there, it costs them $1,000. They're going to go to the place where it costs them $1,000, not $5,000. And so we need to put in things such as price transparency. That's number one. Number two, we almost passed a bill last December that would have addressed PBM reform. These are the middlemen that drive up the cost of drugs coming to the people who are buying insurance through their employer or through Medicare or Medicaid. We had a reform for that. It kind of fell apart at the last second, but that would lower the cost of prescription drugs for everybody. And then to get a little bit more complicated, there's something called silver loading, in which premiums are increased on everybody in the exchanges. Mm-hmm. You can repeal that and replace it with something else called cost share and reduction payments. Now we're into the weeds. That would lower premiums by up to 11% to 15%. But step one is to reopen the government. Everything I just listed has got to be evaluated by people in the government in order to see if it works for the government.
It seems to me, you're saying $100,000. I thought the people that were getting the help with the insurance were making a lot less than $100,000. Maybe you know better than I do, but it seems like the gulf between what you want to do and extending the credits for the people that are paying for insurance now with the help of the government, that's a wide gulf, and some people are going to get hurt in between there, no?
Everything I just told you has been previously agreed to on a bipartisan basis. That's a crazy thing.
So why hasn't it passed?
A variety of reasons. Because something else came up, because there was some confusion about it, because there was a timeline that was missed, because maybe the House agreed to it, but the Senate didn't. But everything I listened to has been approved on a bipartisan basis. And so that's the frustrating thing. If Democrats would open the government, we could actually get this legislation finished being written, and we could pass it, and we could lower the cost of health care.
So let's talk about these SNAP benefits. Is that going to pass or not? First of all, can that pass without the government being reopened?
Yes, it can pass without the government being reopened. And I can't tell you if it is. I don't know the whip count. It also has to pass the House of Representatives, not just the Senate. And so, yes, it can pass the Senate, although I don't know that it will. But it also has to pass the House, too.
But is Mike Johnson going to put it up for a vote, right? That's got to happen.
I haven't asked Mike about that, and I just don't know that.
So at what point do we find out if it's going to happen or not? Because we got a November 1st deadline, right?
If we pass it today, that'll send it to the House. Mike would have to bring the House back in, but that would, we'd figure that out pretty quickly. That's not that's a knowable that can't be known.
So I guess at what point does it turn into action, Senator, where you talk to Mike Johnson to make sure that this happens so the 40% the kids that are on, 40% of the people that are on SNAP, the kids don't get punished in all of this?
Well, Mike will respond to the bill. If it passes, then he will come out and say that he's going to call the House back and he's going to take it up, or he's going to say that he won't. Sometimes events get into the saddle, and so that would be what would happen here. We're trying to decide if events are in the saddle.
So I'm trying to figure out that this starts in the Senate. There's a Senate bill that has to pass the Senate, even though this is moving money around, or is appropriations? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, it passes in the Senate, and it would just unlock the money that's available.
Okay.
And so it could pass. It could start off with us and go there. But by the way, let me just say one more time.
Yeah.
If Democrats had not shut the government down, we wouldn't be in this situation. And all Republicans were trying to do was continue what was really a Joe Biden budget for 7 or 8 more weeks. And now it's been shut down. And it could open up tomorrow if they would say, let's just open up, and we wouldn't have to worry about the SNAP benefits.
So if they would open up, would you be willing to discuss extending the Affordable Care Act subsidies in the future or not? Or is that dead on arrival?
I think a good deal would be open it up and immediately begin to consider how do we lower the cost of health care. And they could put up, okay, wait a second, for a year we need to extend premium tax credits. But just say, okay, we're going to open up the government, and by December the 1st, we're going to make a decision, and we're going to have a vote. And that would give Republicans a shot at lowering the cost of health care, give them a shot at extending the premium tax credits. It may not happen, but I think that would be a deal that could work.
All right. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your time. 7:55, 5 till 8. Traffic now, WWL.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.